Exodus chapter 38. I'm sorry, Ezekiel. What am I thinking of? Exodus. That's because in Sunday school up there we were studying Exodus. Ezekiel chapter 38. Yeah, we look at a few verses in Exodus this morning in the Sunday school lesson. Ezekiel 38, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, set your face against Gog, of the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. Prophesy against him and say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I am against you, O Gog, chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. I will turn you around, put hooks in your jaws, and bring you out with your whole army, your horses, your horsemen fully armed, and a great horde with large and small shields, all of them brandishing their swords. Persia, Cush, and Put will be with them, all with shields and helmets. Also Gomer with all its troops, and Beth Togomora from the far north with all of its troops, the many nations with you. Get ready. Be prepared. You and all the hordes gathered around you, and take command of them. After many days, you will be called to arms. In the future years, you invade a land that has recovered from war, whose people were gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. They had been brought out from the nations, and now all of them live in safety. You and all your troops and the many nations with you will go up, advancing like a storm. You will be like a cloud covering the land. This is what the sovereign Lord says. On that day, thoughts will come into your mind and you will devise an evil scheme. You will say, I will invade a land of unwalled villages. I will attack a peaceful and unsuspecting people, all of them living without walls and without gates and bars. I will plunder and loot and turn my hand against the resettled ruins and the people gathered from the nations, rich in livestock and goods, living at the center of the land. Sheba and Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish, and all her villages will say to you, have you come to plunder? Have you gathered your hordes to loot, to carry off silver and gold, and take away livestock and goods, and seize much plunder? Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, this is what the sovereign Lord says. In that day, when my people Israel are living in safety, will you not take notice of it? Will you come from your place in the far north, you and many nations with you, all of them riding on horses, a great horde, a mighty army? You will advance against my people Israel like a cloud that covers the land. In the days to come, O Gog, I will bring you against my land so that the nations may know me when I show myself holy through you before their eyes. God's word for our consideration today. Please be seated. I've entitled this message this morning, Rumors. And we know that Jesus Christ said in Mark chapter 13, verse 7, when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. In September, I presented a program at our Searfoss Senior Connection called The War to End All Wars. Some of you from your history classes in high school might remember that that is what President Wilson used to describe at that time in American history that was called the Great War. And today, historians call that conflict that waged between 1914 and 1918 the First World War. But obviously, still on our planet today, there are many wars going on. I want you to pause just for a moment and consider the incredible text that we're looking at this morning together. How could the prophet Ezekiel, 2,600 years ago, forecast so accurately and with so much detail the rise of Russia to its current military strength and its direct and obvious designs in the Middle East, particularly the country of Syria? I believe that God inspired this Jewish prophet Ezekiel, and you have to remember Ezekiel lived 600 years before Jesus was even born, to give us a preview of an impending end time invasion of Israel. Ezekiel wrote these words not because he knew what was going to happen in 2015, but because he was guided by the Spirit of the living God. There is no way the prophet Ezekiel could have made up these things on his own. Long before current events could have influenced the interpretation of this text, Bible scholars have recognized that Ezekiel's prophecy really referred to Russia. A Dr. John Cumming, writing in 1864, said, quote, "This king of the north I conceive to be the autocrat of Russia, that Russia occupies a place and a very momentous place. The prophetic word has been admitted by almost all expositors," unquote. In the opening portion of this grand prophecy, there are mentioned several nations, and you're probably saying, "Pastor, these are strange names to me." The most important of these nations that are mentioned is called Gog, identified as the ruler of Magog, and he is further described as being a chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and the leader Gog will apparently lead an armed force from the land of Magog. And isn't it reasonable to assume that Gog will also send equipment and supply those allied with him? Now, some of you might be saying, "Well, I've never heard of this Magog before." Magog is mentioned all the way back in the book of Genesis, chapter 10 and verse 2, as one of the sons of Japheth. And this is a fact that's also repeated in 1 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 5. Magog is also mentioned in Ezekiel chapter 39, verse 6. And if you turn to the book of Revelation, chapter 20, verse 8, which obviously talks about the end times, we find Magog again. Now, the most plausible explanation seems to be that Gog is the ruler and Magog is the nation or the people. The American Standard Version of the Bible translates the expression "the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal" with the expression "the prince of Rosh," which was some way connected with the root consonants of the modern word we call in English Russia. The people of Rosh, they were an ancient people located to the north of Israel. And details about that are found in Ezekiel chapter 27, verses 13, 32, and also in chapter 32 and verse 26. The Bishop Loth of England wrote all the way back in 1710, quote, "Rosh, taken as a proper name in Ezekiel, signifies the inhabitants of Scythia from whom the modern Russians derive their name," unquote. Another nation mentioned in this prophecy is Tubal. Tubal is also a son of Japheth, mentioned in Genesis 10:2 and also in 1 Chronicles 1:5. And Tubal was, these people were originally located south of the Holy Land, but eventually they migrated and they moved north. And they have also been identified as being a part of this ancient Scythian tribe, which at one time occupied the Asia Minor or modern-day Turkey. So obviously these future invaders are going to be coming from the north of Israel. Did you notice in Ezekiel chapter 37, verse 5 that we read? It talks about the country of Persia. What modern-day country was known as Persia? It is the modern-day country of Iran. And I heard an account on the radio October 1st this year, that not only are Russian aircraft, tanks, and soldiers on the ground in Syria to the north of Israel, but also in conjunction with biblical prophecy, the Iranians are also sending troops to Syria. In fact, there are Russian air traffic controllers now based in Baghdad, Iraq, not far from our embassy there, and they are coordinating the air transport of Iranian troops to help the Russians in Syria. By the way, Syria has never signed a peace treaty with modern Israel, and neither has Iran. How about the country of Cush? Cush has often been referred to as this an area east of Egypt, but yet west of the Red Sea. And I think many of us are aware of some of the violent activity from Islamic extremists in the adjacent Sinai Peninsula in recent years. And then what happened just 8 days ago? A Russian plane mysteriously, and now they're thinking perhaps a bomb was aborted. Where did this Russian plane go down? Right down over Sinai. Some people have placed the country of Put immediately south of Cush in Africa. The country of Gomer was usually associated with the ancient Sumerians, some of whom were located in Asia Minor, again, which is north of Israel, and others in Eastern Europe. Beth Togarmuth has been identified with Armenia, again, located to the north of Israel. Now, what happens, according to the Bible, to any nation who attacks Israel? What happens to any nation that disregards God and the Bible? Well, they certainly fit into the profile of anti-Semitic leadership that has occurred over the years in Russia, not just under the communist dictators, but even under the czars. And I know some of us have short memories, but we have to remember that the present leader of Russia, Putin, once was an officer for the Soviet KGB. How about Meshach? Some believe that this name has similarity to the modern name of Moscow and its consonant structure. And there's also the name in there called Tubal, consonant-wise similar to the Russian city of Tobolsk, just east of the Ural Mountains. And perhaps the most convincing explanation that Russia is going to be involved in end-time events as the invaders that come from the far north in Ezekiel 38:15 and Ezekiel 39:2 is that if you look at the world and you look at the globe, the only nation that is in the far north of Jerusalem would be Russia. And Russia's capital, Moscow, is directly north of Jerusalem. I remember one time in studying world history, you know, we have traditions as Americans, but Russians also have some strong traditions too. The Russians talk about the first Rome that fell in 476 AD. And the Russians also say the second Rome, Constantinople, modern Istanbul, which fell in 1453, it fell. The Russian people firmly believe that they are the third Rome, and they believe they will never fall. Put all these facts together, linguistically, geographically, theologically, the identity of this great end-time invasion force is very clear. Now, some people have looked at this passage with a lot of skepticism, and they say, wow, Ezekiel just isn't describing modern warfare. Ezekiel is describing here ancient methods of warfare. Some regard these ancient weapons as merely figurative of modern warfare. But I want to ask you this question. Are there any modern armies in the world that still ride horses? How many of you realize that after 9/11, when President Bush sent the first American soldiers into Afghanistan, they were special forces? And how do you think they rode into Afghanistan? They were riding on horses, not on armored personnel carriers, and not on tanks. This invading army in the Bible is described as a great horde which will invade a land where people were gathered and brought out from many nations. Isn't this descriptive of the modern nation of Israel that declared its independence in 1948 and was immediately invaded by all of its Arab neighbors? But this is talking about a future invasion of Israel that's described as like a big dark cloud covering the land. I wonder, could this be descriptive of some type of an airborne assault? How many of you remember the first oil embargo back in 1973? Okay, remember those odd even days and the long lines? Well, of course, I know a lot of you remember that, but you just don't want to tell me. Okay, one thing that I remember from that Yom Kippur War, and of course there was the war between, you know, Egypt and Syria and Israel and so on. Maybe some of you might not be aware of how close the world came to prophetic fulfillment back then. Our intelligence agents knew that Russian airborne troops were being loaded on planes in Russia back in 1973. And the purpose was they were going to intervene to rescue either the Syrians or the Egyptians if the Israelis didn't stop. And President Nixon was very aware of that. And remember Nixon and Kissinger and all the diplomacy and everything. But there were some real stern words and communiques which went back and forth. This invasion could have happened during the Yom Kippur War of 1973. Apparently, this is going to be a future surprise attack. The scene that's described in Ezekiel 38, verses 10 to 13, it's a modern scene where people live in towns and villages without walls. Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish ask a question in our text. They're asking whether it's time for them to come in and take advantage of the invasion and seize the plunder. Sheba was located in what is today southwestern Arabia. And again, Saudi Arabia. Very interesting country. Some of you remember in 1991, we sent hundreds of thousands of troops to protect Saudi Arabia from Saddam Hussein. Some of you also know that American troops weren't even allowed to have a Christmas tree outside their tent because this would offend the Saudis. Oh, by the way, Saudi Arabia has never signed a peace treaty with Israel either. And the people of Dedan, they were Arabians and traveling tradesmen, and they established themselves in biblical times in the region around the northwestern end of the Persian Gulf. And that area today is comprised by the nations of Kuwait and Iraq. Again, those two nations have never even acknowledged the right of Israel to exist. No peace treaty has ever been signed between Iraq, Kuwait, and Israel. Tarshish, most Bible scholars think, was probably located in what we would call today the Western Mediterranean or modern Spain. Clearly, if you look at Ezekiel 38, verses 14 to 16, you can see that these invaders are going to be brought against Israel for a purpose. Did you catch the purpose in our text? So that the nations may know me when I show myself holy through them before their eyes. We live in a world where so many people are trying to erase God out of their minds, even the knowledge of God. I was in a Maryland district courtroom as an observer on October the 1st of this year. And when it came time for people to testify, I heard these words. On penalty of perjury, do you swear or affirm to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth? That's where it stopped. Not even one mention of God's word. The words that used to be in those oaths or affirmations, so help me God, they're gone. They are purposely omitted. But we can look forward to another time that's described in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14. And by the way, that's printed on the front of your bulletins today. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And that is also going to include every empty courtroom in Washington County. You know, one of the major factors in the last decades of past Middle East conflicts has been the threat of Russian military intervention. We don't have the threat now. We have it actually happening. And Dr. John F. Walford wrote the following back in 1990. Now, this is before the first Gulf War. Listen to this. Quote, "If Russia's economic survival or national security are threatened, Russia will have few options other than a direct military move to control Middle East events," unquote. We're all very aware that Russia has made its first move. Russian military intervention in the Middle East is no longer a rumor. President Eisenhower was once vacationing in Denver, Colorado. And it came to his attention that there was a six-year-old boy by the name of Paul Haley who was dying of an incurable cancer. But little Paul Haley had one great dream. He hoped someday to see the president. When Eisenhower was on vacation, he got into the presidential limousine, and they drove over one Sunday morning to Paul Haley's home. Paul did not know the president was coming. The doors of the limousine flew open, and out walked the President of the United States, who knocked on the door. Paul's father was wearing blue jeans, an old dirty shirt, and he hadn't even shaved that day. He opened the door to President Eisenhower and he said, "Can I help you?" And Eisenhower responded, "Is Paul here? Tell him the president wants to see him." And little Paul, to his amazement, walked around his father's legs and stood and looked up into the face of the man he admired most, President Eisenhower. President Eisenhower kneeled down, shook his hand, took him out to tour the presidential limousine, and before he said goodbye, he hugged little Paul Haley. They shook hands again, and the president left. Now, I'm sure all of Paul Haley's neighbors, they talked a long time about President Eisenhower's unannounced surprise visit. But you know what? There was one person at that house that wasn't entirely happy about the visit. That was Paul's father, who said, and by the way, his father's name was Donald Haley, who said, "How can I ever forget standing there dressed like I was in those jeans and that old dirty shirt and an unshaven face to meet the President of the United States?" You see, Paul's father, Mr. Haley, was just not prepared. Jesus Christ came a long time ago to visit sin-sick humanity on this earth. Jesus has offered the way to have sins forgiven and to live life on a new level. Jesus has promised He's going to come again. But how many people do we know who are not prepared for Jesus coming again? Do you remember Jesus' words that I shared as I began this message today? Do not be alarmed. Let's resolve to be prepared. Let's resolve to continually and faithfully share the gospel. And as we consider current events in the light of biblical prophecy, may we, every day we wake up, remember the promise that Jesus gave to His children in Luke chapter 21, verse 28. When these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. Let's sing about our future redemption as we turn to number 377, One Day. Standing as we sing together for this hymn of invitation, number 377.